CliffCentral.com.
All right, it is time for another episode of Collectomania, and we've got a special edition of Collectomania today. It's the Valentine's special edition, the month of love, the day of love. In fact, this is Valentine's Day. Couldn't be better. It's brought to you by the South African Gold Coin Exchange and the Scoin Shop, who you know are also on top of things when it comes to Valentine's Day. If you're thinking of buying your loved one something really special, something that will grow and appreciate in value over time, think about them. It might be the best bet for a gift. Leanne Moll, don't you think that would be a nice present for someone to give you for Valentine's Day? Yeah. Your mic's on mute, Leanne.
What? Hearts all the way?
Yeah, absolutely. All right, so let's meet our guest, and it's very, very cool to have Nancy Rosen on. She is the president of the National Valentine Collectors Association in the USA. Yep. The association has its own Facebook group, almost 1,000 members, and her own collection has now been placed at the Huntington Library in San Marino in California. So she is a super collector. She's not just one of these people like maybe you or I who have a couple of things lying around the house. So let's welcome her to the show this morning. Yeah. Nancy, it's so great to have you on, and thank you.
Thank you for inviting me.
Oh, good.
And it's not just Valentine's Day. I celebrate love every day, and I try to encourage people to do so. I think it's a mix for a happy life. But I like to share what I have, and I'm a crossbeat. I'm not a hoarder, and I don't think it's a mental problem. I just found a topic that I love, and I was focused on creating something that had real was really solid and would elevate the Valentine so people would understand how important they are throughout history.
Well, I love it. And don't worry about being called a hoarder, because we had a psychologist. We had a psychologist the other day who explained to us the difference. So we'll wait. The jury's out. We'll wait until the end of the episode to decide whether or not you're a hoarder.
Uh-oh.
But I think many of us are on one or the other side of a very fine line here. So you don't have to feel bad.
Well, I feel like collecting is one of the most important parts of my life anyway.
Oh, yeah.
The people, the experiences, and now I'm leaving a legacy in the library of something that I created. So collecting has had a focus, and it's not over, but it's very solid where it's going to be. So I'm very happy about that.
Well, I do think you're the first of our collectors who we've spoken to who's actually had their collection put in a museum or a library. I mean, that's really, that's the pinnacle of success if you're a collector. No, it's tremendous. So tell us how it all started for you. Where did you begin collecting?
You know, going antiquing when my children were little, their grandparents would come and stay, and my husband and I would just go off different directions. And anyway, to get out of the house, I guess. And I found the little Victorian die-cut scraps, you know, little flowers and little decorations. And I thought I would collect them so that one day I would do decoupage. You know, that was the trend in the 1970s.
Mm-hmm.
And as I collected, I discovered that they were really decorations often used besides in scrapbooks. They were on Victorian Valentines. So I started collecting them. And then I wanted to go deeper and deeper into the history. And there were only two books existing at that time. And I just wanted to copy what one of the Frank staff, who was an English collector, had put together, this incredible evolution of the Valentine. And so that was my goal every place I went, to try to find the things. And sometimes, most of the time, dealers wouldn't even know what they had. But because I'd read a book, I had a little extra inside information and I could find treasures. And when we do the pictures, I'll show you like one of my treasures. So it just became a goal to try to find the best of every category. And so that if I did put it in a museum or library, people could come and do research and they could take any aspect of the collection and do a thesis on it, because it wasn't just one example or the best example, but it was a whole group. And you could see how one company, for example, would have progressed over the years. And so to me, it became a very scholarly, and I was always trying to defend the concept of the Valentine to people who thought that it was some ridiculous over embellished, you know, junk that nobody would
fantasy
want.
Thing like Christmas.
Yeah, yeah. So we went from the very serious through all of the historic periods, and I found a lot of other people who, you know, are interested as I am. And then I'm
curious about how, you know, if we are going to talk about the scholarly aspect for just a minute, because human attitudes to love. You know, the way people feel about love, the way people have spoken and written about love over the eras has changed tremendously. And I mean, if you look at a Valentine from, you know, the late 1800s or the early 1900s and compare it to the way that people, you know, kind of give these funny Hallmark cards to each other now, or, you know, it's a rose or it's some cute little poem or whatever. How much has changed when you look at the breadth of your collection? You're probably the only person who can answer that question, having looked at all of them. Well, what do you think of human beings and love?
I think that love is a constant, to tell you the truth. I think it's been celebrated, you know, romantically and satirically, you know, for a long, long time. And so the things we see now that we call anti-Valentines, and some of them are really gross, and some of them have double entendre, they existed in the early 1800s also. You know, I don't think people have changed that much. Maybe we express it more openly, but there were some pretty, you know, caustic things in those eras also. A lot of them in the late 1800s, the penny dreadfuls, the comic ones, a lot of them were thrown away. They were on cheap paper. People were embarrassed or hurt. They would throw them away. So in the beginning, I wasn't really interested in them. Excuse me. And then I found that they were a real social documentary, and they were important. And now they are getting a lot of attention by a number of institutions and collectors. So I don't think it's changed that much. The language of flowers, you always had a message in a flower. Although I have seen one florist who advertises yellow roses for Valentine's Day, but they don't know that the real meaning is jealousy for yellow roses. So it got a little crazy. But I think people have always celebrated love in any way they could, from the most elegant, extravagant, expensive, to the naive handmade folk art that's maybe done on reused paper, wallpaper, or old letters, things that were just cut out or made by candlelight. So it's just, it's the basic concept, I don't think, has changed. We see it in the Valentines reflected by war. You know, when the sailors were going off, and we have the sailors' farewell as a huge theme because they might never come back. We have in the Civil War, where those letters from home were a reminder of home and wanting to survive and get back. So there's a lot of history and a lot of passion, you know, but I don't think love has really changed. You know, I think it's the most important element in our lives.
You make me think that maybe, you know, the way we tend to stereotype people, you know, people from Greece are like this, or people from New Jersey are like this, for example. we probably stereotype periods in history, because, as you rightly point out, we always think of the Victorians as being very prudish and very sober and judgmental and terribly conservative. But actually, during that time, there were some quite racy things being done.
Nothing was sacred, really.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, la la.
Absolutely.
I mean, you have alcoholism treated. I mean, I have one that shows a woman who looks like an angel, and when she opens her wings, she's holding a bottle of whiskey. You know,
she's my spirit animal.
All right, so let's have a look at some of these, because I can't wait to actually get into your collection. Yeah. So where should we begin?
I mentioned one that I found quite by accident. It was among my first purchases, and it's called a devotional. Do you see that one?
Ah, yes. Hang on. Let me just find it. The devotional. I've got an American
one. Well, that's an American Scherenschnitt, which is a paper cut from about 1825. It's not the one I was talking about, but it's one I really love. And it's got the Cupids, the initials in the middle. I sometimes think that the artist might have waited and you know, put the initials or dedication in the center when the order was placed, because this would have taken so long to create. And a lot of the ones that we have, some of the Pennsylvania German Frochter types, were made really, I think, on spec. You know, they were filled in later. And the devotional that I'm going to, it was marked as number one.
I got it. Here it is. This is the devotional.
And that one I love because it's on parchment, which is, you know, really before paper was readily available. And it's cut out. It's dedicated to St. Paul. And, it's just about 6 inches high. And I had been at a shop, and I asked if they had any Valentine memorabilia, anything pertaining. And the man was very abrupt and said no. And I think we bought something else. And as I went over to his glass top desk to make the purchase, I saw this under the glass. And I said, wow. Well, would you sell that? And he said, sure, you know, $20. And so I walked away with a treasure that, you know, it's worth much more than $20. But it's historically important because we're talking about the mid-1700s. We're talking about the cut work shows the hearts, it shows flowers, it shows lace. This was supposed to emulate real lace, tatted lace. Wow. And then later on in the evolution of the Valentine, we find this done in paper lace embossing. But these were made in convents by nuns for charity. And my speculation is that the name of the saint was put in, you know, when it was ordered, when it was bought. And they could be sold for many different occasions, for communion, for marriage, for death, for love. So, you know.
It's incredible. You say it was worth more than $20. But, you know, if you collect like you do, you obviously develop an eye for these things. And right. You were buying other things and you said you saw it under the glass top table. And, you know, people are. If you're interested in something, it's amazing how your eye gets drawn to it almost everywhere and anywhere. And you'll see something driving past in the road. You'll go, oh, got to go into that shop.
Right.
And when you have something like this, are you scared of not looking after it carefully enough? And, you know, we know that many old books and papers deteriorate over time. Yeah. You have to be careful that you don't expose them to the wrong
all
light.
All of the threats, floods, robbery.
Oh, yeah.
Well,
right.
I am very cautious, and I use archival materials completely. Most of the time, I put them between layers of archival mylar, and then I put them in another, either a rigid, we would call rigids, which are these hard plastic cases you can slide them into. And then if I go to a show or an exhibition, people could handle them and look at them on both sides. Or I put them in albums. Mostly stamp collector albums, but there are a lot of albums now since when I started. But it's really important. I feel that if they've lasted as long as they have, if the love has lasted, it's my obligation to preserve it. And some of these things, you really have to put into two layers, because if you just put it between the pages, even these archival pages, there's a magnetic attraction, and when you remove them, pieces can lift up, pieces can get caught. So you have to be careful. People, you know, save these things in different ways, sometimes just in boxes with archival paper between them in layers. If you frame things, you can't have them in bright light because some of the colors will fade. And if you frame them, they have to be framed archivally so that the glass doesn't touch the object also. So there are ways to enjoy them. I think my house is unusually dark because we were always trying to put things on interior walls and not have bright light. Because I did have one watercolor that faded. And, you know, once you've had that happen once, you try to avoid it. And with the later ones that we'll show some of these chromolithographed cardboard pieces, the cardboard it's beautiful, but it dries. It's very friable, very fragile and breakable. So you have to be careful with all of these things. Just because you bought them in great condition doesn't mean that they're going to stay in good condition on your watch. So I'm very happy that most of my collection has gone to the Huntington, where it's all been.
Now they can look after it.
Now they can look after it. Absolutely.
But you said this this watercolor that faded, and you know, this is probably the only time this word is absolutely appropriate. But that's pretty heartbreaking.
It is.
I can also imagine your family have to be quite tolerant and understanding of a collector. We've spoken to all of our collectors about this. Yeah, they do think. Do they think you're crazy?
Well, I've got Valentine's on so many walls. I say we celebrate Valentine's Day every day. I have a couple of posters that I made, and they're up, you know, one's behind me on the wall, one's in the bathroom, you know, every place you go. We were big collectors. My husband was a big collector of Japanese art. So I started by just putting a few things in the bathroom, and then I gradually took over a lot of the house. So things were all over the place.
Nancy, I'd love to ask you.
Yes.
When I was in primary school, I don't know what
grade
that is
school.
In America.
Grade school.
That's when sending Valentines became a thing. And the first Valentine I received was from a classmate who had knowledge of Asian art. Mm-hmm. And he'd painted the sunset for me and written a poem. And at the age of 12, that was just too much for me. I couldn't accept it all. It was almost at a level of eekness or embarrassingness. And then later on, only now, I'm thinking back and I'm thinking how beautiful that piece of art was that he right. sent me. And I'm only appreciating it now, 30 years later.
He's the one that got away, right?
Yeah, is he the one who got away?
Right. Well, the Valentines from primary school, from grade school, are a very important part of, especially of our Facebook page, National Valentine Collectors Association, because many of the younger collectors, you know, these pieces, they're antique now. It's hard to believe. We think 1920s to 1940s and 50s, you know, we're all getting older, I guess. You know, it used to be like the Huntington collects pre-World War I. So if it's like before 1920 or 1915, they collect it. But many collectors collect those primary school ones, some, excuse me, just from teachers, and they're very popular. And I do collect them also. They're wonderful. Nowadays, you have to give a Valentine to everyone in the class. It used to be selective.
That's the thing.
But no one wanted to be left out.
I wanted to ask you, what is your perception of how things have changed? I mean, I was of the era that if I hadn't received at least one Valentine, it would be a time of sorrow. My mom would need to be ready to console me. Said girl would have received 17 Valentines.
Exactly.
Well, and schools, should it not be?
I think some schools don't even share them anymore because of that. They don't want feelings to be hurt. And I really haven't checked up on what the latest is around here. But in the old days, you know, like 1850s, women could send Valentines anonymously. All throughout my collecting, women could send them anonymously. It was the one time of year, of course, leap year we know about, but this was a time when they could be sent, and many of them were proposals. I have one where a man cut off the bottom of a Valentine and returned it to a woman and said, "I do not desire your love." You know, it was pretty blatant.
Sure. Well, it's quite harsh.
But they were... If sometimes people get a Valentine and they say, well, it was never used because it's not signed. That doesn't mean it was never used. But Valentines were sent sometimes with, you know, puzzles, like the name might be spelled in numbers or backwards or just, you know, from your Valentine. And there are stories about how before there was a uniform postal system in England, and people had to pay for the same thing happened in America, too. But the recipient paid for the letter, depending upon how heavy and how far it had traveled. So there were no envelopes because that would add it to the weight and you see them folded. But many fathers are said to have refused the Valentines because the daughters had received so many and they were anonymous and they didn't know who they were from anyway, so they weren't accepted. So, the anonymity was always a big thing. And there are comic Valentines, you know, made to the spinster and the person who never received a Valentine. So there was heartaches. But then we have other images that show every strata of society, from the housemaids to the, you know, fancy, you know, landowners or whatever, to the all the daughters in the family receiving lace Valentines. So it was pretty general. Every strata of society, people wanted to celebrate however they could.
Isn't it interesting how many filters there were in place then? If you take social media into account now, there are some filters, but guaranteed an email sent will be an email received.
Right.
And then, I mean, the letter had traveled from country to country across animals and into fortresses and read by kings before they were passed on. You've got an email.
No, I should have turned my phone off.
Is it a Valentine?
It's a Valentine.
I don't know. But that's one thing about, you know, I love e-cards and e-Valentines. And I send e-cards at Christmas because there's so many people. But, you know, there's no tangible Valentine. So as much as I like that, I mean, having something that you can hold, that tactile quality, what I call the fingerprints of love, they're not in an internet Valentine. So I want to encourage people to send something, even if it's just something quickly homemade. I mean, I have the most wonderful Valentines made by my grandchildren that are just, you know, they're just so wonderful. And if you want to call them naive or primitive, but they're absolute tokens of love.
I think there must be quite a lot of pressure in your family to send the right kind of Valentine's card to Gran. So can I ask you about some of these others? I mean, you've spoken to us about the devotional, which is absolutely beautiful.
Right.
But tell us about some of the other ones.
Okay. Are you going to show me some pictures?
Yeah, what's this over here?
Well, this one is an English one. The postmark is 1806, which is one of the very earliest postmarks. There are some from a couple of years earlier, but when I bought this, it was the earliest one. It was from the collection of Frank Staff, who wrote books about the penny post and about Valentine's. And it's a sailor who has come home, and he's toasting his wife with a glass of wine. And he says, you know, in war, I serve my king, and now I've come home to serve you, basically. And the decorations around it are all these, you know, spring and mating. And that's what, you know, the mating of the birds and the tulips and the primrose and the nesting bird at the top and the hearts that are entwined. It looks like what we frequently would think of as American folk art, but it happens to be English. And it was folded and has postmark on the back. And so I've been able to, through the internet, look up, you know, who this Mr. Pitt was and his wife and married in a local church. And it's very charming and one of my favorite pieces and very special.
That's extraordinary and so beautifully made. And if you think that that's over 200 years old,
right,
it kind of gives you a lot of perspective. I mean, the people who were so in love with each other then, you can almost feel a bit of it now,
right?
Even though they've been gone for 200 years.
So things like this, when I buy something like this, I'm competing with collectors of folk art, of costume, because you look at the costumes, you see the way they're dressed. He's wearing a typical sailor outfit, which we will see in a lot of the sailor's farewell types of drawings and Valentine's, and her gown and her hat and the birds. It's, you know, very special to me. I personally like things that are handmade better. I love all of them, but the handmade ones seem to have a special, you know, the conditions.
And I have to tell you, I completely agree with you about receiving an actual letter and people who've taken the trouble to make a card or to write something in ink or in pen or whatever on a piece of paper. It always feels much better to me.
Right. Well, before there were fancy, you know, papers, which did come about in the late 1700s, I have a page from a book. I didn't send you the picture, but it's a flyleaf torn out of a book, and it's dated 1684. And it was just written there about the morrow being the Valentine. And it's one of my absolute treasures, given to me by a collector who got it from another collector. And despite its value, which I think is great, he gave it to me as a gift of love. And I treasure that. That's 1684. And it's, as I said, it's just a piece of the front, is, you know, front page. There's nothing on the other side, torn out from an early book. So 1684 is my earliest. And you could have letters. It didn't have to be fancy paper. And often there would be a lock of hair attached. Mm. You know, that's the most personal gift.
So what is this here, this picture?
This one it's a continental paper cut. It's Europe, about 1710. It's also paper cut. The red is a piece of paper that I put behind it when we used it as an invitation for a Grolier Club event. I love the costumes. You see her headdress and her it's just incredible. He's beautiful. Got his boots and his waistcoat and his tri-corner hat. And they're handing each other these.
Does he have a dog? And she has an animal too.
Yes. Look, it reminds me of the unicorn tapestries we have here. Mm. And then sometimes on early memorials, you see angels, you know, like the ones that are on the sides. So to me, this is just wonderful.
Beautiful.
And I did buy that in England at an auction.
And what about this? Because this is beautiful. This is absolutely stunning. What is this?
This is called the theorem. It's a stencil drawing. This is what we call schoolgirl art, also about 1825. And the watercolor would have been spread on a stencil with this, we call gum Arabic, to make it shade, to be able to shade it. And it's got the roses and morning glory buds, it looks like, and wonderful poetry in the middle. And I've seen one or two other copies of this, very similar. Maybe the colors are a little different. So it makes me think that maybe it was a design that was in a lady's book, like a Godey's Ladies book or some other book, which people might have copied. And that was a very popular concept. Or it could have just been schoolgirl art, and a teacher offered the stencil to the students. Who knows? Wow.
So, I mean, there are a lot of these, and I want to give them all the right amount of attention.
Too many, maybe.
No. Rather that than too few, and you have so many to choose from. I'm surprised you managed to actually whittle it down.
These were pictures I had from different projects, and this is amazing. This is a small one. It's about probably 4 inches by 2.5, something like that, and it's a product of a woman named Esther Howland. We call her the mother of the American Valentine. She started her business, and she graduated from Mount Holyoke Female Seminary in 1847. That was in Massachusetts. Her father was a stationer, and he received some valentines from England from some clients that he did business with. And when she saw them, she thought, gee, I can do better than that. So she made some samples. This kind of sample has layered lace. It has her little, you can see the red wafers behind, which was one of her signatures. There are little accordion pages which make it rise up in layers, and then she has maybe a Baxter print in the center of an artist. And so these would have been sent. She would make a template, and all the materials would be in a box. And she first had her brother take them on a sales trip. He wasn't happy about it, but he did, and he came back with $5,000 worth of orders in 1847. Wow. So she started her business with template, which she would put together, and she would have a coachman take them out to ladies' homes. And when they finished all of their chores, they or their children would assemble valentines. The horse and buggy would come back a week later and collect them, and the women would get a little pin money.
So it's like the Amazon of that time, right?
My mind is absolutely blown. Right. That romanticism existed then.
She was a real entrepreneur.
Yeah.
And she was, before you know it, she was earning $100,000 a year at that time, which is incomprehensible.
That's huge.
And there were many stories about her, but some of these early ones that I think were assembled in homes look like the children assembled them, because they don't follow any particular pattern and they look kind of homemade. But that was how she started. And then she was very successful, and she made larger ones. The smaller ones are identified. There are marks on the backs of most of them. When she started getting competition, she started labeling them. But then her bigger ones were never signed. And collectors and even Hallmark have attributed them to her because of the materials that were used were only available in certain places, and how she was able to acquire them. So they were on fine English lace that might have cost $50. So we know that one suitor was rejected because the woman said she would never accept a man who spent wasted so much money on a basket. I think it was an Easter basket.
Here's another one of hers.
This is one of those. This is the famous Howland PK.
That's embroidery, right?
This is just one of the layers. This might have been an interior layer of this lace. And then you would open up and they were majestic. And the image, the flowers are like a kind of clay composite that was hand painted. And so she had the idea, she was importing them from Germany, that they should machine make them so it would be easier. And so even the paper ones, her girls wouldn't have to cut out. And they rejected the idea. But a few years later, embossed scraps were available pre-cut. So I think she must have been the inspiration. So she's icons.
The level of detail here is just absolutely unbelievable.
Right.
Yeah. Wow.
And you have to, I mean, if you enlarge it and you get closer, you see, and these were like 8x10 in size. And when you find them, it's like you're finding the Holy Grail, for a collector. Wow.
And this is, this looks like a very old drawing, the kind of Georgian stuff.
Yes, and it's by George Cruikshank. And the big hat. So it's kind of an early satire. And you see her hat, and you can imagine the styles of the day with these balloon sleeves and the big crinolines making fun. And he was very good at that. And Cruikshank did the satires even in the late 1700s. So that was one of the reasons that the Huntington was so eager to have the collection, because they could follow the evolution and of the English satire that they have from the 18th century, and this is just the continuation.
So her waist is the same size as her neck.
Right.
And and her sleeves don't even span
the
width of her hat.
Maybe that's a love letter in her hand, or I don't know. Wow. But I did see a girl just the other day who had a wasp waist like that, and I just couldn't believe it. But I don't know, not me. You get older, you spread a little bit. It's hard.
You and me, girl.
You just have to love it. This is an example of the chromolithography that reached a peak around the turn of the century. This is a German-made postcard, and it's a kaleidoscope. And if you look on both edges, both sides, there's a wheel. And when you turn that wheel, it's a kaleidoscope.
With the stencils. And as you turn the stencils, the cogs fit in, and they draw a pattern. Am I right?
Yes. And so there were other postcards and other Valentines made like this. I have one that has a geisha on a Japanese geisha on a Valentine, and her I think it's her dress that changes color. And then I have them also for other holidays. Right. It was just another. Postcards are a really important aspect of the collecting because several reasons. They're really very pretty. There's a lot of history involved. It was a huge collecting passion. People would send cards back and forth to each other. You know, we had a postal system. People would send holiday cards, but wouldn't have a holiday message. It was just maybe something they were sending. But also, collectors nowadays are finding that you can buy them very reasonably priced. You can find an artist-signed Valentine postcard by someone like Ellen Clapsaddle for, $2 to $10. Maybe even less. So they are around. And a lot of the young collectors who, they really love the subject, they're not familiar with the history, for one thing, which I'm trying to spread on our Facebook page and by articles I write, but they can't afford expensive things. Some of these today, we're talking, $100, $200. And, as you can get much more expensive when you get into the rarefied ones. But I'm enjoying having the young collectors on our site. And we have a sister site, which is our marketplace. People are selling things for $2 and $7 and $10. So there, you can put together a collection. And then as you get more knowledge or more passion, you can get better ones. Or you may decide, I don't like Valentine's at all. I'm going to collect something else.
And sell them.
And so I encourage people to try that,
I'm going to quickly go through a couple of these. I do want to stop at the Superman one, though. But I just want to show people some of these ones. And feel free to drop in a little bit of info here.
Yeah, this is a postcard from 1910. It's a Schmucker postcard. And I love her. She's eating hearts. And, chocolates are a very popular gift. And now, of course, any heart-shaped thing for Valentine's Day. But chocolate's supposed to be an aphrodisiac. So... you hope to receive some chocolate bonbons. We've just discovered a collector on our Facebook page who only collects heart-shaped tins and has thousands of them. I couldn't believe it. I don't think you can ever erase the scent of chocolate from a tin. So that must be quite a perfumed place. This is another one. And this one, I mentioned Ellen Clapsaddle. And this is one of hers, The Dreamer. And you'll have a brother and sister version. I think they're just charming. And so you have people who collect children, who collect dogs. We have lots of people who collect cats and dogs. Valentines with kittens are very, very popular. So and usually
that's amazing. What is going on here?
This is the interior of one of those Howland Valentines, the one I showed you on layers. This is called a cobweb, and usually it's called a cobweb, a flower cage, or a beehive. They're the only names I know. When it's closed, it's flat. And if you look carefully, you can see concentric circles, which are either hand cut or machine cut. When you lift the cobweb by an invisible, almost invisible thread, a little silk thread, you'll find something inside. Here we have a couple. He's playing the guitar, which is also an amorous symbol, on the couch. But sometimes you'll have a lock of hair or Cupid or something small. It's usually on the front. So this is attached to the back page. And it's very unusual because if you opened it too fast, you could tear it. But I wanted to show this.
Wow.
Cobwebs. And Superman.
Yeah.
Well, I've got Superwoman. I couldn't locate a picture of Superwoman either, but believe me, I do have her, and she's beautiful. I don't want anyone to think I'm telling favorites. But yeah, this shows you that Valentines were made to go along with every popular movie or, I mean, we have Superman. Praise. We have, I just can't think off it, Alice in Wonderland, whole series, Pinocchio, the Seven Dwarfs. And then you want to collect all of them. And so these all came out at that time, late 1930s, 38, 39, 40. And they usually have copyright marks on the back. We have Mickey Mouse. I mean, wow. And then there are some that accompanied personalities like you, like radio shows. And we have them on Valentine's too. So beware.
Nancy, I'm just so pleased that you gave us a little peek into your world. It's
mind blown.
I'm glad you enjoyed it.
And it's such a beautiful thing to be able to share on Valentine's Day. And I appreciate very much your time. I know that you're in New Jersey and it's early in the morning over there for you now. And I really appreciate you showing off your incredible collection. And I'm thrilled that the Huntington Library is looking after so much of this for posterity. What are you going to do with the stuff that you haven't given to the library? Are you going to hand it to the kids? Is there someone who wants it?
Well, I'm working on a group that is another group that's going to go to the Huntington. I was just out there last week, as a matter of fact, because there was a book fair at the same time. So I had an opportunity to look at all the shelves and the drawers. And I couldn't believe that some of those things really had been mine because, they're not here anymore. I'm going to send them some more. I'm trying to put together a little collection for my children. They love them, but I think they just want maybe one piece to hang on the wall. And no one has the room to store a collection or house it. And I probably will sell some, but it's very hard. I'm a collector, not a dealer. And so I'd rather just, I have some of my old collectors from before we had the Facebook. We had a regular organization with newsletters I did four times a year. And some of those older collectors, maybe they don't even have the internet, and I'll just put together some packages for them and share the love, spread it.
Sometimes
people buy old ones to give now, to re-gift the love.
Well, one thing that comes through loud and clear about you is the love. And thank you very much for sharing your collection with us.
Thank you so
Nancy
much.
Nancy Rosen and her incredible Valentine collections. This Valentine's Day, the South African Gold Coin Exchange and the Scoin Shop invite you to celebrate consistency. I mean, during times like these where everything's uncertain, who can you count on to have your back? Well, your greatest cheerleader may be gold. It has a 6,000-year track record as a safe store of value, so that's pretty consistent. Head over to their website. It is at scoinshop.com and enter to stand the chance of winning a dinner worth 2,000 Rand for you and your loved one. And consider very carefully and seriously giving a really beautiful Valentine's card, making it yourself. I mean, this is what people used to do. Beautiful.
Happy Valentine's Day.
Happy Valentine's Day.
Thank you, Nancy. Day.
Thank you.
Take care.
Wow, that was terrific.
Thank you. CliffCentral.com.